Every Friday morning, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, the editor and publisher of The Timberjay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, another week has gone by, another week of stories. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, let's talk about a big community meeting in Orr. Got a pretty big turnout about a pretty important issue to the folks that live around there.
Yeah, that's for sure. They had over 100 people turn out at the community center in Orr here this past week. And, you know, considering there's 280 people in Orr, that's a pretty big turnout. And I think it reflects the concern that has really been generated there in recent months. And we've reported a little bit on this before and actually talked about it on the radio before. But there's just been this epidemic of crime up in the Orr area, mostly break-ins, you know, thefts. Anything that's kind of left unattended seems to disappear up there right now. And, you know, it can be anything from chainsaws to outboard motors to just really anything that might have value. And it's quite clear that there's some, you know, groups of individuals who are, you know, working up in that area on kind of a methodical basis, and people are really frustrated about it. You know, it's not like it's necessarily, you know, murders or robberies or things like that, but, you know, it's the impact financially for folks when they, you know, lose a chainsaw or a outboard motor, something like that, you know, it does add up. And some people have been hit more than once, and, you know, they get pretty frustrated about it. And, you know, the problem is, you know, a lot of these places are, I mean, it's a big chunk of territory in the Orr area, and lots of relatively remote places, and, you know, they don't necessarily have neighbors nearby. So if somebody's not home, I think what happens is these criminals who are out there probably living somewhere nearby and probably know the patterns of people, you know, in their area and know when they're not home. And they figure these isolated residences, they can go in there and kind of operate with impunity. And I think people are just fed up. And so they're looking at forming, they're calling it the Northern St. Louis County Crime Watch, in order to try to present a more organized effort to, you know, fight back and keep tabs on what's going on and, you know, try to assist law enforcement in identifying individuals, providing maybe some evidence, you know, to try to get some of these people locked up. And they did have some folks from the St. Louis County Sheriff's Office were there, and, you know, they presented their perspective on this. And, of course, you know, they don't want, you know, their message was, we want you to call us. You know, they're not looking for people to be vigilantes or anything like that, and I think that message was pretty clear to folks. They're really supposed to be kind of the eyes and ears in the community in order to assist, you know, the law enforcement that is there. Unfortunately, there isn't a lot there in terms of resources. You know, this basically, once you get north of the Mesabi Range in St. Louis County, you know, it's a lot of land, and there's very, very few deputies actually stationed in the area. So, you know, they can be at any time, they could be 50 miles away from, you know, an incident. So even if you do call, it can be, you know, quite a while before they can actually get there to respond. So, you know, those are some of the challenges, obviously, that law enforcement faces up here. We did editorialize on this, actually, this week, urging the St. Louis County Sheriff's Office to look at least on a temporary basis, trying to devote a few more resources to, especially investigative resources up here. They, you know, the deputies who were at this meeting, they indicated that, you know, they actually think they know who's doing a lot of this. It's just a question of, you know, trying to develop the evidence so you can, you know, press charges and make them stick. So that's, you know, kind of the role that maybe getting a little bit more investigative horsepower up here, you know, to try to develop that information so they can start to deal with these folks.
All right, that sounds good. I'm sure a lot of folks who it's their second homes or cabins, and, you know, like you said, they can't always be around, and that's a big impact if some of their expensive items that are important to life up north get stolen.
Yep, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about community college. We've heard that the community colleges in our region have had enrollments go down, and you have reported this week on a proposal that hasn't been approved yet but is being talked about. What do you know?
Well, I had the opportunity to speak to Mike Rayich. He's the interim president of the Northeast Higher Ed District. And just wanted to kind of find out, you know, what is happening here. They've been meeting. They've had a group of staff and administration and faculty that has been meeting for the past several months, and they're, you know, trying to develop some ideas in terms of trying to better the experience for students, as well as you know, trying to address you know, some of the implications of the declines in enrollment. And they had originally planned to have a decision announced next week on November 15th, but according to Mike Rayich, he's going to be meeting later this month with the chancellor of the Minnesota State Colleges, that's Devinder Malhotra, and he wants to have that meeting before announcing any kind of a, you know, plan to move forward. But one of the plans that is under consideration, and I think the one that's probably the most likely, is a plan that would involve the merger of the five colleges under the Northeast Higher Ed District. And that would include Itasca, it would include Hibbing, Rainy River up in International Falls, and then Mesabi in Virginia, and then Vermilion Community College up in Ely. So they would be looking at merging these into one larger institution, and then the five schools would essentially become five campuses. And, you know, by doing this, students would have probably some greater flexibility in terms of, you know, where they might be able to take classes. They wouldn't have to be enrolled at different schools. So there would be some, you know, benefits there. And then presumably they would also, you know, save some on administrative overhead costs. And that's certainly a consideration given what's, you know, happening with enrollment. And I was a bit surprised to find out the extent to which enrollment has declined. In fact, it's down by about a third across the five colleges since 2011. So that's a pretty big drop over the last, you know, 8 years. And certainly that's something that they are going to need to address at some point. And it's not clear exactly, you know, all the reasons why they've seen this decline, but, you know, it's apparent that there's two things primarily that are driving that, and one is that, you know, our population here is not really growing. It's getting older, but it's not increasing, so we just have, you know, fewer people in the kind of the age group that's likely to attend a community college, and so that's you know, clearly a factor. And then it's also because there's been a relatively strong economy over the last, you know, close to a decade now since we started the recovery from the Great Recession, and according to Mike Rayich, it's typically when you have a strong economy, you know, students, when they get out of high school, they're maybe, you know, going into apprenticeship programs, or they're going on to four-year, or they're going straight into the workforce. And so a lot of times during periods of strong economies, people are not necessarily going into the community colleges. That's they tend to do that a little bit more when maybe the economy's weak. So so then, you know, people may be trying to improve their skills, you know, if they're unemployed. So so that those are a couple of trends right now that appear to be working against the local community colleges, and they're just trying to adapt, I think, to those varying conditions.
Well, it's a big weekend in northern Minnesota. I'm hoping that you get your deer earlier in the day so that I see you at the Great Northern Radio Show tomorrow in Hibbing. But
I hope so too, frankly. It's going to be a chilly opener, sounds like, although it looks like Saturday the temperature is supposed to be a little bit warmer. It was supposed to maybe get some snow as well, which is nice. We already have some snow on the ground and, of course, much of the area, and that should help hunters, certainly. It's always good to have a little bit of snow. Really, it's much easier to catch the movement of deer in the woods when you've got a little bit of snow on the ground. So I'm sure a lot of hunters are happy about that. And so far, you know, it looks like it's going to be really a mixed season. And in fact, I talked to Tom Rush. He's the area wildlife manager for the DNR based in Tower. And he said, you know, folks who've scouted are probably going to do better just because, you know, there aren't tons of deer everywhere. We're still kind of in a recovery mode, and a lot of, at least in our neck of the woods up here, northern St. Louis, northern Lake, Coochin County. In fact, you know, a lot of these areas, there weren't really very many antlerless permits given out. And that means hunters are going to be confined to bucks only in a lot of the places up here that they'll be hunting. So, you know, that usually makes it a little bit harder. But hopefully the weather conditions will help. Plus, we do have a late start. Actually, this is the latest that the deer opener can actually happen. And that means that the deer should be pretty much right at peak of the chase phase of the rut. And at that point, you know, the bucks are focused on one thing, and we all know what that is. And they're not very wary out there, and they're moving around a lot. So it makes them kind of vulnerable to hunters as long as they're sitting still. So as long as the hunters can stay warm out there. And it sounds like Saturday that'll be easier. Sunday looks like it's going to be pretty chilly. I saw in the teens potentially, and windy on Sunday. So that's going to be a little tough. So, yeah, I definitely hope to get my deer on Saturday.
And, well, this is not an easy question, but what does deer hunting mean to your region, our region of northern Minnesota? I mean, what...
Well, I mean, you know, it means a lot of different things. It depends. I mean, certainly from the economic impact, it's very significant. You know, I mean, when you get that influx of hunters, you know, they have an economic impact. They're staying. Some of them have their own camps and whatnot. But even if they do, they're probably stopping by the local grocery store to fill up on all their supplies for you know, the period that they're out at camp. And if they're not at a camp, they're staying in a, you know, local motel or hotel. They're eating, you know, meals out in many cases. They're buying gas, you know, all that kind of stuff, buying ammo, buying, you know, whatever they need. So it certainly has a major economic impact. I think there was a Fish and Wildlife study done a few years back, and they put the all hunting-related expenditures in Minnesota at about $725 million. And, of course, deer hunting is a big percentage of that. So, you know, that's significant, especially, and most of that, of course, is out in kind of the rural areas where people are hunting. So, you know, it clearly has a big impact. And then, of course, you know, there's the whole tradition aspect of it. You know, deer hunting has, for a lot of people, it's like family reunion time. I mean, I know for a lot of people, that's the one time a year that, you know, their brother and their nephew or their niece, you know, comes up and you get together as a group at, you know, a camp. I know there's so many people that it's that, you know, it's the one time a year when they have lots of family get together out there and they spend some quality time together. So, I mean, it's important in many ways up here.
All right. I can't wait to talk to you next week and see if you got your deer, or see you Saturday. See you tomorrow at the Great Northern. It's Marshall Helmberger. It's the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. Thanks, Marshall.
You bet. Thank you, Heidi.